Torah Master Ches Teves Tovshin Ayin Ches Rabbi Yamin Singer.
Okay. Right, good morning. Today's Ches Teves. And if you look in the Gemara, you see the description exactly what happened. We have Shulchan Aruch, Tur, Shulchan Aruch. A lot of discussion about what happened on Ches Teves and what we're supposed to do about it. And also the effect on the world. So starting off with the Gemara describes how Talmai HaMelech was a great lover of knowledge, had a huge library, and he decided he wanted to have the Torah translated into Greek. So he got the Chachamim, he got 72 Chachamim to come, not telling them why they were coming, and then he proceeded to put each of them in a separate room, and they were all told to translate the Torah. His intention was obviously to pick and choose the translation he preferred, or maybe to mock the fact that they couldn't translate it exactly the same way, and they didn't know what they were talking about, who knows. Miraculously, the Gemara describes how they all translated identically. One difference. Not only that, but they made the same alterations. So the famous differences they made in the translation, because they didn't want Talmai and the Greeks to misunderstand exactly what the Torah was saying. So the Torah starts off with Bereshis Bara Elokim. So they were worried, because if it would say that, they would think that Shtei Rishuyos, which means that they would imagine that Bereshis, that would be the name of the God of the creation, if you like. They will say, this creation God, Bara Elokim, created the regular God. There are two gods, right? Chas v'shalom. The discussion, Rashi and Tosfos, exactly how they were learning it, what they thought. But, right, for example, Na'aseh Odom, we will make a man. So the Greeks would start thinking there must be a whole committee, a whole pantheon of gods. So they changed Na'aseh to E'eseh. They missed out the name of the Arneves, which is one of the animals, not kosher, because that was the name of the queen in Greek, and they didn't want the king to think they were mocking his queen, etc. And they all made exactly the same alterations. It's an amazing story. So at the end of this, this concluded. This was on Ches Teves. How long it took, we don't know. The Gemara doesn't describe the effect. However, if you look in different Makoros, you can see that. If you look in Megillas Tainis, for example, it says that the different days one should fast, in addition to the regular Tanesim, and one of them is Shmoyne B'Teves, and he writes Megillas Tainis, he says, Nichtabar Torah Yevonis, Yimei Talmai HaMelech, the Torah was written into Greek in the days of Talmai, V'choyshech Bo La'olam, says the Megillas Tainis, darkness came to the world. Now that's a surprising thing, really, because you have to take it in historical context and realize at the time, the Jews in Egypt, and certainly in Alexandria, where it took place, were very happy. And they actually had a Yom Tov on Ches Teves. For them it was a good thing, a wonderful thing. Look, the Torah is now in the language, which is the language we speak better, and certainly our children won't be so fluent in Hebrew, and our grandchildren. So, it's a wonderful simcha for us, and the Goyim will be able to access the Torah as well, and understand the beauty of Yiddishkeit. So they understood the translation as being a cause for celebration. It became a Yom Tov for them. Ches Teves a Yom Tov. What were the Jews doing as a historical aside? What were the Jews doing in Egypt anyway? So this wasn't the first Talmai. The Talmai before then, Talmai was the name of, like Paroi, I suppose, right? The name of all the kings in that time in Egypt. These were the Greek rulers. After Alexander died, so his empire split up. And at first there were wars between the different empires, and ultimately it was calmed down a bit. So the first Talmai took 100,000 Jewish people captive from Israel to Egypt. And many of them were enslaved, but slowly things improved for them. And this second Talmai, who arranged the Targum HaShivim, so he gave them full rights. And the Jewish people built up Alexandria. The ports in Israel were being destroyed by the wars at the time. So because of the Jewish know-how and business skills, Alexandria became a major port. About a third of the population of Alexandria was Jewish. And the Jews had full civil rights, and they saw themselves as part of the greater Hellenistic Empire. So translating the Torah into Greek was really a feather in their cap. It was a wonderful simcha for them. Chazal looked at it differently. And as I said to you just now, Megillas Tainis describes, he says, Choyshech bo la'olam. other Makoros, if you look in Masechet Sofrim, it talks about it as being as difficult for the Yidden k'yoin shenasabos or egel. It's as hard as the same as the day when they made the egel. Not just dark, but the egel is the worst thing for Klal Yisrael. Immediately after Matan Torah, remember what happened. So in Megillah Sofrim, it says that this day was like the day when they made the egel. Right? Now, very interesting. Why was it so bad to translate the Torah? Why did Chazal not agree with the Simcha and the Yom Tov approach? Right. So we find, the Kodesh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to explain the Torah Ba'er Heitev, which means Shivim Lashon, right? Which must have included Greek, obviously. And not only orally, but it had to be written down as well later on. V'chos Savto Al Havonim, he was told they put up the stones. They wrote the whole Torah in all the languages, in 17 languages, on the stones, right? So what's wrong with translation? There can't be anything wrong with translation. Right, so why were Chazal so against it? So the simple reason, you can understand, there's a big difference. If a Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, it becomes a mitzvah, and it goes together through Moshe Rabbeinu with the original Lashon HaKodesh, then there's no sakana. However, when the initiative comes from Talmai, right, that's a different story altogether. And it's similar in a way. Go back to the eagle. What's the comparison to the eagle? Why the eagle? What does the eagle have to do with translation? Which day was the eagle made? No, it wasn't made on the 17th of Tammuz. It was made the day before. Right? The Avodah Zorah took place on the 17th. Aaron delayed them, didn't he? He said, Chag Lashem Mochor, right? So, the day they made the eagle, what was the intention of the people? So if you look in the Mepharashim, they say it wasn't actually an intention to do Avodah Zorah. They wanted an intermediary. They wanted a Mamud, so that Moshe Rabbeinu is not there. So their thought was, right, we'll have a way to communicate with Hashem. That was the thought. There wasn't an intention to rebel against Hashem originally. That's not how it started off. The next day, however, it went the wrong way. The concept is not wrong when it's a mitzvah. Kodesh Baruch Hu did tell us to make later keruvim, and there are Kli HaMishkan, the physical items through which the Kedusha of the Shekhinah comes on into the world. When it's a mitzvah from Hashem is one thing, but you can't come along and make up your own ideas as far as that's concerned. The Medrash even describes how they saw the Merkava and the Pnei Shor. They wanted to take the Pnei Shor, this concept, the Malachim and the Pnei Shor and the Merkava, and they wanted to bring this down to Olam Hazeh. So the Kavanah was L'Shem Shamayim, but it went the wrong way. The translation. But the translation itself wasn't bad. The question is, what's going to happen tomorrow? Tomorrow, Talmai HaMelech and his librarians, the biggest library in the whole world, was in Alexandria. By the way, you know what happened to it? When the Muslims invaded Egypt, they burnt the library. And they said, this is the biggest library, thousands and thousands of manuscripts. And they said, well, if it's not like the Quran, we don't need it. And if it's in the Quran, we also don't need it. So they burnt it. So much of the ancient knowledge, science, and medicine of the Greeks was destroyed at that point, in that area anyway. So what was the problem? With the Egel, they were not instructed to do it. It becomes an Avodah Zorah. If you're told by Kodesh Baruch Hu you have to do such and such to make keruvim, etc., then that's a mitzvah. There's a very, very big difference. So the idea of making the egel, what were Chazal worried about? Chazal were worried, what's going to happen tomorrow? Talmai HaMelech sits down, starts reading the Torah, and he'll take things, even though Chazal changed things to avoid some of the most glaring dangers, but still there will be problems, and they'll start twisting it. And you can see, actually, that's what did happen, because the Targum HaShivim, the Septuagint, by the way, it's abbreviated. You know what they call it in manuscripts? They call it LXX, for short, right? Which is the Roman numbers for 70, LXX for 70. So they used it, and that served as the basis later on for the Latin translation. And from the Latin, it went into other languages and so on. So the English Bible also traces its way back to there. And by the time it's been translated, it's Chinese whispers, enough times, and things taken out of context and mistranslated, we ended up with a tremendous Torah for Klal Yisrael. So that's why Chazal looked at it totally differently. It wasn't a Yom Tov. It was a time of Choshech. It was like the day they made the Egel. Choshech came down to the world for 3 days. Why 3 days? One suggestion, and some of the Akronim suggest, because it's 3 days. If you look in the Slichus, which we say on Sorbetavis, it mentions 3 days, which could be a Tainis. One of them being today, Ches Teves, which, by the way, the Torah says that Ches Teves and these days are Tainis Min HaTorah. Surprising lesson to you, Tais Min HaTorah. But Yosef qualifies that, he explains what the Torah means to say is you should treat it seriously as if it would be Min HaTorah, But it's very extreme Lashon to use. But he also says he doesn't know anybody who fasts on these occasions, but the Magen Avraham takes issue with that. And he does say that everybody is able to, certainly would be a good idea to fast. I can see we're all Hasidim here of the Beis Yosef. No one looks very hungry. So that's the concept of Ches Teves. Now, as far as we're concerned, nowadays, translation, the art scroll, these are amazing things. So this is obviously in the care of a lot of people, and the Kavanah is obviously good. But that's the tragedy that started with Ches Teves. Now, tomorrow, also another fast day, and Tes Teves, Shulchan Aruch writes about, and it says in Shulchan Aruch, B'tes boy, the Torah writes, Lo kotzvi rabbi seinu, amahu. They don't write. And the Beis Yosef uses a similar lashon, right? The Beis Yosef, similarly, he says that we don't know. We don't know, right? That is the day that Ezra Nehemiah died. Some suggest that the reason for the fast on Tes Teves is because of the Yortzeit of Ezra, and maybe Nehemiah as well, some suggest. But on the other hand, it seems that Hidal points out, if you look in the Bahag, Baal HaLachos Gedolos, which is before the Torah, He says as follows, this is Chazal didn't tell us the reason for the fast, and it's the day when Ezra and Nehemiah passed away, right? The period of Ezra and Nehemiah. So it seems there's two separate things. So what is this mysterious fast? What was the reason of Chazal for Tes Teves? Lots of suggestions, all different suggestions. There are those who want to suggest that the reason for Tes Teves, Chazal couldn't tell us because it was too dangerous for us to know. And it would have created a great wave of anti-Semitism had it been publicized, and had the non-Jews known why we were fasting on Tes Teves. Right? So what exactly happened on Tes Teves? But what was the big secret? Later on, other things happened on that day. Galgalin Tzuchus, the Yom Zakai V'chul. So other things happened. So what exactly happened on Tes Teves? So there are opinions that it was the birthday of Yoshka. That's one opinion. And in fact, Nittel, there is a suggestion that Nittel stands for Noilad Yeshu Tes Leteves, right? That's the suggestion of what it is. There are other suggestions of other tzaddikim who were killed or assassinated on that day, all probably very true. Most amazingly, there's an incredible medrash, which, by the way, I brought the other to you, so you pass this around. You know what this is? That is the first, the oldest Greek translation. That is actually the Targum HaShivim. I'm sure it's not the original one they worked on, but this is in the Vatican Library, right? It's in ancient Greek. So I'll leave it on the table. You have a look at it afterwards if you have any Greek speakers here. Amazing how the world was changed through the Targum HaShivim. Now, Tes Teves, what happened on Tes Teves? So we've got all different suggestions. There must be MS in all of them, Elu for Elu. But there is a Medrash that says it was actually a Yortzeit, the Yortzeit of Shimon Kippur. You heard of Shimon Kippur? No, I also had known the Shimon Kippur when I started looking at this. And this was so fascinating, I started looking it up. And there are Makarios, the Rishonim, who discussed this. He was known by some as Shimon Peter Chamor. There's a mitzvah to be Mishana Shein. You don't, if you have somebody who's a Mishumad, you don't, you know, you mock him, you change his name. So instead of calling him Kippur, they called him Peter Chamor, right? Like a firstborn donkey, huh? Who was he? What was the story? And why are we fasting on the day of his Yortzeit? So according to the Medrash, you know, it's a Midrashim, the story was like this. The beginning of the development of the Christianity, it was a breakaway sect in Judaism, much as Reform and other conservative and other strands of Judaism are. But because of that, there was a tremendous danger to the Jewish people, because many people didn't see it as being Epicurus. They thought, oh, it's another option, different minhagim. So this is, I'll join the new sect, the new group, different shul. And they kept all the Jewish Yom Tovim as well. So it made it very dangerous for the Jewish people. They were too close. Not only that, there was actually a physical danger, because the new Christians were very, very powerful believers in their faith, and they were attacking the Jews. And anybody who wouldn't convert, they would kill them. So there was a spiritual and a physical danger. V'la malshinim, right? That's why it was put into the Shemoneh Esrei. It was added on later on, wasn't it? So I'll tell you this Medrash, amazing Medrash. The Medrash says, it's a Midrashim, he says, there was a huge argument between the Jews and the Christians. And the Jewish people were being attacked and killed. So the Chachamim had a meeting, and they cried, and they prayed to Hashem, and they davened, and they said, Hashem, please save us from this tremendous tzara. Tell us what to do. Now, in that meeting, there was one of the Zakenim there. His name was Shimon Kippur. Kippur seems to be the Aramaic for rock. And he said to them, listen, if you want, I will save you, on the condition I'm going to have to do a lot of aveiros to do this. But I'm doing it in the Shem Shemayim for the needs of Klal Yisrael. And but I want you to accept in yourself that whatever I do, the shafers I have to eat, all the other things I'm going to do, that will be your achrayis. Right? And so they accepted upon himself, on themselves, that anything he did, he had to do to save them, it would be the Shem Shemayim, and they would forgive him. They would give him a guarantee. He wouldn't be attacked. Well, okay. So he goes to the capital of the Christians, and he screams out. He says, everybody who believes in Yoshka should come to me. I'm his representative. So they said, prove it. So he said, how? I'm just quoting the Medrash. So he said, how? So they said, well, you do the Nisim which he did, and we'll believe you. So lo and behold, they brought him a dead body, and they brought him a leper, and he was able to cure the person from his tzaras, and he made tchias amesim, according to this Medrash. How he did it was with kishuf or the nes, the Medrash doesn't explain. And so they accepted him. And then he said to them, once he'd gained their confidence, so he said to them, listen, I'm a special shliach from Moshe Ho'ish, and he told me that you should cut yourselves off from the Jews. Stop keeping their festivals. Instead of keeping Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, I mean, that was the whole danger. Right? So he made up that they should have other festivals, that the birthday and the death and whatever, the Yoshka and other special days he made up for them. And he said to them, don't kill all the Jews. We need to have Jews in the world, and we need their Torah in the world, just to show how stupid they are. He made that, and said, don't force people to convert. It's not worth anything. I'll leave the children alone. Don't kidnap the children, and so on. And because of the confidence they had in him, then they accepted that. And he was the main reason that Christianity split off from Judaism and saved everybody. Yes. Oh, right, exactly, yes. So according to many opinions, right, there is a whole debate on this. Where does Nishmas come from? Nishmas is a very old tefillah. Nishmas even referred to in the Mishnah, because it talks in the Mishnah about saying Nishmas by Seidenacht, right? So it's a very old thing. Who wrote Nishmas? So some people are very angry about the mere suggestion that somebody who seems to have been a Meshulmah should have written Nishmas. But there are Rishonim who say, no, it's true. He actually did write Nishmas, and there's part of the Avodah from Yom Kippur as well, which is attributed to him. So what happened? Once he already had his influence, and he managed to get them to break away from Yiddishkeit, from then on, he separated himself from them, and he got them to build him a house in this isolated rock or somewhere, and he didn't have to eat shafers, and he spent his time davening and writing tefillahs, which he sent to the Yidden, and they were accepted. So Nishmas became, according to this opinion, right? How? Oh, yes, okay. Shimon Shotach. Because the name Shimon actually appears in Nishmas. If you go back, starting from Shoychenad, and go back every sentence, you're spelling out Shim, Mem, Ein, Vav, Nun. So what's that Shimon? So, right, but there are those who say it was Shimon Kippur, Shimon Petachamo, and those who debate the point, and Masovici seems to argue with himself. Right? But it's a very, very amazing, amazing story. You wonder, parenthetically, what would have happened when the Reform movement started off in the Maskilim, if there would have been a similar reaction. What would happen? The problem, the big problems with all these breakaway movements is that people think they're kosher, and the ignorant people think, oh, I'm still Jewish. But if it wasn't called Reform Judaism, if they just called it, made up another name, another religion, then it would be far less attractive. They think it's still, it gives a hashtag by calling it Judaism. That's the problem. So that's the story. That's the story of Shimon Kippur and the story of Tess Teves. Other suggestions about the Yort sites as well. And then, of course, Asar B'Teves, the best advice I can give everybody is not to go to Australia. Because in England, I worked out, it's about 10.5 hours, I think, the fast. The fast here starts, I think, about 6:30 approximately. Check the times exactly. And, around about 5 o'clock it's finished. Something like that. Yeah. So, okay, but in Australia, it's the longest day of the year. Here it's about the shortest days of the year. In Australia, it's very, very long. So don't go to Australia or the southern hemisphere. Just stay here. Asar B'Teves, so we spoke about Ches Teves, we spoke about Tes Teves, and it's 3 days running, as mentioned in the Slichos. So Asar B'Teves is a unique fast, and it has chumras in Asar B'Teves, which you don't even find in Tisha B'Av, right? First of all, it's the only tainis that can come on Erev Shabbos, right? The only place it's come Erev Shabbos. The calendar actually doesn't permit. You can't, if Tisha B'Av is Chal and Erev Shabbos, it's Nidche, right? We don't have, reason being, because you're not supposed to go into Shabbos fasting, because it's not covered Shabbos. You shouldn't be fasting on Shabbos. And every fast is pushed off, with the exception of Asar V'Teilis. Then there's a debate whether you're supposed to finish the fast, but the Maaseh Halacha is, and we've had it many times. In fact, it's not that uncommon at all for the fast day to turn out on Friday. It's about, I think in the last 20 years, it's been about four times, I think, and then coming up in the next 20 years, it's about the same thing. So every few years, you do get Asar V'Teilis on Fridays as well.
Why
so that's it.
Because
you're fasting. You're choosing to fast on Shabbos.
I'm saying, why is that a problem? How is your fasting on Friday?
Right.
Right,
you're entering Shabbos in a hungry... Oh, I'll tell you in a minute. Come there, right? Right, and the second chumrah of Asar V'Teves is that it could even be, according to the Beis Yosef, according to Avraham Ram, he says you could even fast Asar V'Teves on Shabbos itself, which means it's certainly stricter than Tisha B'Av. Any other time in which you have that would be Yom Kippur. Right, so what's special about Asar V'Teves? Why does it have such a tremendous chumrah? So the reason being, quotes the Pasuk, Be'etzam Hayom Hazeh, right, which means it's the only tainis which has a fixed day. So Mefarshim explained that Chazal, every Yom Tov, there's a Sfeika Deyuma, right? So we have 2 days in the Chutz Laaretz, right? Tanesim, we don't do that. Why don't we have a double tainis? You could eat in the evening, have a 2 days fast. Because Chazal did not fix, the Nevi'im didn't fix the days of the tainis. Look in the Pasuk, it says Tzayim HaRaviv, Tzayim HaMishi, the fast of that month. It doesn't say which day. So the day doesn't really matter so much, which day you're fasting. In fact, according to one opinion, if you missed fasting on that day, you could be rushed to Meitah on. Although I don't think it's halacha, but it's interesting there is such an opinion anyway. So because it says Be'etzem HaYom HaZeh, in the Pasuk, relating to Asar V'Teves, when the beginning of the siege took place, right? So, the Etzem Yom HaZeh means it's not like the other Tanisim, and it has to be, the Etzem Yom HaZeh means it's Doicha Shabbos, either on Friday or on Shabbos itself. And you can't, it's not like the other Tanisim, which you can be mashlimate on, it has to take place on this day. But, okay, that's the halacha. So the question is why?
Started off.
Right, okay, because all the Tzaras start off from Asar V'Teves. Because Shivas Batamos and Tisha B'Av and some Gedalia, all the Tanesim, which are Avelus and the Golos and the Chorban and all the Tzaras of Tal Yisrael, everything starts off from Asar B'Teves. Asar B'Teves is when? The beginning of the siege. Now, it's really interesting. If you look at exactly what did happen on that day, the answer is nothing. They did nothing at all. The Yidden were in the city. The walls are not even scratched. They hadn't started off with the battering rams yet. Nothing. The people in the city, everyone was safe. There was a bigger army, not too many years before, than besieging Yerushalayim, and the Yidden were saved, because they did Teshuvah. Sancheiriv, in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, was also around Yerushalayim, and nobody got killed. It was a Ness, and right, the Goyim ran away, and you know the story. Here, however, the same thing could have happened again, but the Yidden didn't do Teshuvah. So really, this created, this situation, the siege of Yerushalayim, created an incredible opportunity for Achdus of Klal Yisrael. Everybody's in the city. The wall is not even touched yet. All that they knew, they'd just done teshuva not that long ago. They knew if they were to teshuva, Hashem would help them. But obviously, it didn't happen, and that's why the Chorban happened. But on that day, it was an opportunity which was missed, if you like. Right? So Asar V'Teves is the beginning of the end. Everything comes out of Asar V'Teves. The same question you ask, we have the same question about Tisha B'Av as well. Why are we fasting on Tisha B'Av, not Yud? Asara, because most of the Beis HaMikdash burned down on the 10th, right? You know the reason? Because Aschalta de Peronus Adifa, the beginning of the tragedy is worse, because everything develops from that. Once the Beis HaMikdash started burning, then the whole thing was, right? The beginning of the troubles, as we said, Asara B'Teves has therefore stricter din than all the others. There are those who suggest that you should treat it more seriously than the other Tanisim, but that doesn't seem to be accepted as the halacha. So I don't think you have to be more machmir, somebody's not feeling well or something, but it's an amazing thing. So you've got these three special sad days, Ches, Tes, and Yud Teves, right? Obviously it must be a connection between all the days as well. In the Slichas we make mention of all of them, so there are those who suggest that actually the tainis that we have today on Asar V'Teves is covering all three, because most people are not fasting the other two. So the time is today, because we make mention of it. And the Slichas also, we're actually fasting for all 3 days on Asar V'Teves. All right, okay, yeah. So it's too difficult. For most people, today we're not so strict with Tanais, and we try, Halai, we should do the minimum. So it's better to watch your health carefully and so on. So, and yeah, so that's the answer there. Okay, so those are these days. Now, I heard, talk about Achdus of Klal Yisrael. And that's the theme, if you like, behind the story of Asara B'Teves. What the result was when there was no Achdus, and the Achdus which could have saved the Beis HaMikdash time and time again, with the Romans, with Chazal and so on. So we heard this week an incredible, beautiful story. There was a guest speaker. I don't live in the area. I didn't hear him, but I'm hearing secondhand. He's describing an amazing incident in Peking, Beijing. There's a mikveh there, in the capital of China. How the mikveh came to be there, I'm going to tell you now. And it's an amazing story of the Achdus of Klal Yisrael, how the mikveh came to be. In Beijing, there's a couple of shluchim there, and they've been working there for some years, but the young lady, the wife of one of them, was traveling every month or so. She had to go to the mikveh, so she would take a flight to Hong Kong, where there was a mikveh. And one time at the airport, she didn't have any baggage with her, just the hand luggage. And she met one of the big machas, a Yiddish lady from Beijing. And the lady says to her, she's not an Orthodox person, she's a very staunch supporter of the Reform, actually. The Reform are not very happy about Orthodox mikvahs, as you know, because the Orthodox communities don't let them use the mikvahs for their conversions, as it were. And so she said to her, where are you going? Where's your luggage? So she said, well, she thought she should tell her. Maybe it would be Kiddush Hashem. Maybe persuade her to use the mikvah as well. So she said to her, well, you know, I have to go every month. There's no mikvah here, and I have to go to Hong Kong. She said, go all the way to Hong Kong. Why don't you build a mikvah? So she said, well, the Chinese government will not let us make a mikvah. Anything that takes place in China can't be under the banner of religion. It can't be called religious. And any Jewish centers there, the Chinese government permitted, providing it can be classified as being purely cultural. So you can have your Jewish center, but it's a cultural center. The Chinese won't let religion in. So they won't let us build the mikveh. We've tried, but they won't let us build the mikveh, said the young lady. So this Reform woman says to her, so she obviously took it on board. And a few days later, when she got back, she rang her up, and she says, you can go ahead with the mikveh. I've pulled all the strings, I've used all my connections, and I've got permission from the Chinese government for you to build the mikveh. Well, so that's stage one. So here we have one of the misyavnim, the leaders of the Reform group in China, if you like, who's actually enabled the building of a kosher Orthodox mikveh now. Okay, so the husband of the young lady, the shgeich there, he phones up. There was I don't know the name of the guy, as a Satmar Chosid from Williamsburg, who's a famous international mikveh builder. And he asked him, will you be prepared to come to China, to Beijing, to build us a mikveh? He says, I'm not sure, it's a long way, and I have to be away from home for a long time, and I don't know. And so I have to ask my Rav. So he goes to one of the Satmar Dayonim. This is the story as I heard it. He goes to one of the Satmar Dayonim, and the Dayan says to him, Zichi, you have to go. You've been married a few years, you don't have a son, and I'm sure he gave him a brach in the merit of doing this, you'll be blessed with the Ben Zohar. Yeah, you'll have a male child. So he goes off, and at the airport, he meets two of his friends from Williamsburg, two businessmen who are in China. A lot of from people go to China, a lot of business there, people made good business there, and some people live there temporarily as well. And they see him at the airport, and they said, what are you doing here? He wasn't a businessman, so what are you doing in China? So I came to build a mikveh, and he told them the story. And they were so impressed with this story, they said to him, you know, we'll fund it. So the mikveh was built. So nowadays there is a mikveh. If you go to Beijing, you'll find the mikveh there. The mikveh was built, enabled by a Reform woman, founded by Satmar, and run by Lubavitch. Amazing, amazing story, right? After the supply, so what can be achieved? In fact, many of the misyavnim after the story of Chanukah and the Targum HaShivim, by the way, it wasn't so distant from the time of Chanukah. Many of them changed completely, and they did come back to Yiddishkeit. They realized the error of their ways. Okay, now I wanted to speak. I've got a few minutes left. It's wrong to ignore the parasha totally. This week you have parashas Vayechi, and everything obviously fits into the parasha. We have the story of Yaakov wanting to be because Yaakov legalis is a kates. Why does Parshas Vayechi? Why doesn't it start off with a space? Every parasha is a gap. But here, there's no gap. So different tirutzim. One of the answers is that Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell his children when the Ula was going to come. Right? So why did he want to tell them that? What's the point of that? So he wanted to tell them, he wanted to encourage them, give them the kayaf to last through the golos. Hashem didn't let him. A few reasons given. The Tzemach Tzadik, right, the vision service, it's an interesting thing. He said Yaakov was Emes, the mid of Emes. If Yaakov would have paskin that the date of the Gula is such a date, that would have to happen. And it would have been impossible to have it any earlier. But the Pasuk says, Ani Hashem b'ito achi sheno. If we are Zoicha, the Gula can come earlier. So Hashem stopped him being Megala, the proper Kates, so that the Gula could come earlier. That's really, really interesting. The Rabbein Ephraim of the Torah, one of the Rishonim, he writes slightly differently to how we usually see it. Yaakov wanted to be Megala the Kates, but he said to his boys, I can't tell you. There's no Kuf Tzadi in your names. If you look at all the names of the Shvatim, Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, there's no Kuf and there's no Tzadis. I can't tell you the Kates. That must be a sign that you are not able to hear the Kates. You're not Zoichete. So they said, well, will you check, please? Is it due to a chait? Is the reason we don't deserve to have this revelation? We can't know when the Kates is. Are we not worthy of it? What's the reason? So he looked at the names again and he saw there's no Ches and Tes in the names. There's no chait. Right? So the reason they can't hear is not because of a Ches or a Tes. So he looked at the names further and there's no final Mem. And there's no final tzadi, right? And there's no final fe, I think, right? Also, oh no, there's a fe. Mem, non, pe. Chof, yes, that's right. Chof, that's right, yeah. Chof, mem, and tzadi. Now, when you do regular gematrias, it stops at 400, right? But if you use the final letters, so final chof becomes 400. 500, yeah, 500, right? Then final, the end of mem will become 600. Right? And the final tzadi becomes 900, which gives you 2,000 altogether. So he said, right? Alpine. Ah, so he said, so what was he megalit then, says Rabbein Ephraim? He was megalit to them, the alpine shana. The world exists in periods of 2,000, right? So alpine toihu, alpine Torah, and alpine Moshe Mashiach. That's his megalah to them, to give them a chizuk, to know that there's an era of Mashiach coming in. Well, that's really interesting. Now, the Shvatim themselves, according to the Medrash, how did Yaakov call them? So, maybe he sent Shluchim, but the Medrash, one day in the Medrash, is that he called them the Machshava, so it was telepathy. So they're all scattered around wherever they were, and all of a sudden Yaakov thinks, hey, Osfu, right? And all the Shvatim turn up. And he then proceeds to give them all brachas, all amazing brachas. But the brachas in the Torah are neged to Klal Yisrael for all the doros in the future as well. And the brachas, it says, Ish asher kivir chosoi b'rachosim, right? Everyone will get a bracha according to his character and according to what would happen, the future history of these people as well. So if you look at each person, the bracha is neged to Klal Yisrael. And you'll notice also that they didn't just get their specific bracha. Rashi says quite clearly that everybody got everybody's brachas. So the bracha for Reuven was focused on Reuven, and Shimon's bracha was focused on Shimon. But at the end, Rashi explains that everybody got the bracha for all the Shvatim. So look at just finish up looking at the brachas of Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, and how it's nogeir to us. Why was Reuven called Reuven? His mother said, Ro'a Hashem ba'oni, right? So Reuven represents Ki ato Yehovani ishi, right? Reuven represents Ahavas Hashem, which comes from Re'iyah. Sometimes in your life you see things, especially if it's Hashkocha Pratis. You see in your life something happened. And this is an amazing connection, an amazing feeling of closeness to Hashem. Hashkocha Pratis is a very tangible thing that's happened, or didn't happen, right? You can see things physically. So that can cause us to come to an Ahavas Hashem. That's Reuven. Shimon, Shoma Hashem, Kisnua Onoichi. Right? That's not Avas Hashem. Shama. If you see something, you relate to it, you can be very close with it. Something you hear from another person you didn't see yourself, you can't be as close to. So that's a feeling of Yira, distance. So we have to have Avas Hashem. We have to have Yira Hashem. What was Levi? Yilove Ishi. My husband will be joined to me, right? Joining Hashem. So that's Torah. Torah joins us. We become one with Hashem through learning Torah. In fact, why was Yaakov able to stay alive in Mitzrayim? Why was it the best part of his life? Because Es Yehuda Shalach Lefonov Goishno, because there was Torah there. The fact that Yidden could learn Torah in Mitzrayim, that meant they were able to survive all the troubles. And in fact, it was the best part of Yaakov's life was in Mitzrayim. The Torah keeps us one with Hashem. And then, finally, for now, we get to Yehuda. And what does it say there? Yehuda ato yoiduchachecha. What does Yehuda mean? Yehuda means, says his mother, hapa'am oide es Hashem. Oide means acknowledge, thank, right? Oide ani. In Divrei Yomim, the name Yehuda is written as Yehudeh, not Yehudah. Translating the word with Yud at the beginning, it makes it imperfect, a continuous tense, if you like, right? Yehuda means the one who continually acknowledges Hashem. We feel ourselves very humble in front of Hashem. We're Hashem's servants, right? This concept of anivus, bittul. So what does the pasuk say? What did Yaakov say to his sons? Yehuda, ato yuducha achecho. You, to get to, we always have this connection to Hashem, but it's concealed. So how do we bring out this inner connection to Hashem, this acknowledgement of Hashem, this humility in front of Hashem? How do we bring this out? It's always there. So you have to go through Reuven, Shimon, Levi to get to Yehuda. Your brothers enable this to be revealed. So we go through Avo and Yira and learning Torah, and this brings out the true inner connection to Hashem. And that's enabled for us in davening. Chazal, when they made up the davening is like a ladder. And davening enables us to connect to Hashem on the highest level. So the climax of davening is in Shimon Esra. You're standing to attention. You can't move. Look at the dinim of Hefzik in Shimon Esra. The only hefzik you can make in Shimon Esra is kuch nefesh, basically, right? Whereas in Shema, you're allowed to make a hefzik. Certain conditions, amens, yesh, meravos, and different things, right? So the total acknowledgement of Hashem's presence in Shimon Esra is absolute. You can't even move. In fact, it's so great that at the beginning of the Shimon Esra, you feel so inadequate and so humble, you can't even speak. How do you introduce every Shimon Esra? Hashem, sefasai tiftoch. Hashem, you open my mouth. I can't speak. Imagine standing in front of the king and being overawed. I'm too scared to say anything. So, look in the davening. First paragraph of the Shema, basically, is Avos Hashem. Right? V'haftas Hashem l'kecha v'chol levavcha. The second paragraph of the Shema does mention Avo, but it talks about Tzchav Oynish. Yishomru lachem, be careful, there'll be a golos, and you have troubles, and so on, right? Ben yiftel levavcha, etc., right? So that's Yira. It's definitely Yira. So we're dealing in the Shema with Avo and Yira. That's Reuven and Shimon. After Shema, what comes next? Emes v'yatsu v'nochem. What's Hadovar Hazeh? That's the Torah. So the Torah, all the Vavs linking us to Hashem. So the Torah makes us one with Hashem. So once we've said the first parasha of the Shema, and the second parasha of the Shema, and then we go through to the Emes V'yatsiv, that's the connection through the Torah, then we can get to standing Shema Neser with total bittul. And then look at the Hemshech V'nyonim. Yehuda ato yoducha achecha, yodcha ba'orefa yivecha. So how can we overcome our enemies? Even in Golos, because the next pasuk says, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, which talks about David and Shlomo, and Mashiach included in that as well. But when it says Yodcha Ba'orefa Yivecha, that's not talking about that people. That's beforehand. So how do we do that? How can we survive? How can we overcome all the difficulties? The answer is to bringing out this concept of Yehuda, this total connection, oneness with Hashem. Then automatically our enemies will run away from us, and even at the end of Golos, the enemies will be scared of us. Yodcha Ba'orefa Yivecha, they'll have turned around, they'll be running away. Right? So that's amazing, amazing, amazing concept. So we spoke a little bit about the days, right, today being the Targum HaShivim, and tomorrow is the Yotzeit of various Tzadikim, right? And Asar B'Tavis, what's so special about Asar B'Tavis? And the Yitz Hashem, Yehovcha Yomim Eilu, the Sosan Simcha, right? B'Kar B'Yomena, and Asar B'Tavis, since it's in a way the saddest of all fast days, it will become the happiest of all fast days in Yomena.